I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. It is a tennis podcast brought to you at the end of finals weekend of the 2016 French Open. And what a finals weekend it has been. We have seen a new French Open champion crowned in the men's and the women's. Garbiñe Muguruza winning the women's titles. And of course, Novak Djokovic lifting the Novak Slam, the career Grand Slam, just earlier on today, beating Andy Murray in the men's final. Joining me to dissect both those matches is, of course, David Law. David, how are you doing?
I'm very well, very well. Just listening to that intro does make me realise how this could have gone either way. You know, you're talking about Novak Djokovic winning the career slam and winning his first French Open. It could so easily have been Serena Williams making her history. It didn't happen for her. It didn't happen for Andy Murray. It did happen for Garbiñe Muguruza. It was a great weekend for me in that regard. The fact that we just had no idea what was going to happen and any of the results would have been a big story. And we've got a couple of corkers there.
Yeah, well, we'll start with corker number one, and I think we'll start with the men's final because it is most recent. It finished just a few hours ago, and of course, Novak Djokovic was the champion. But there's a little bit more to it than that. It was a little bit different to their recent Grand Slam final clashes, certainly very different to their Australian Open final encounter, in that, for me, David, that was one of the biggest and most dramatic shifts in momentum in a tennis match that I have ever witnessed between sets one and two. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would say it was right up there. And I still can't quite put my finger on when and where it's shifted because I feel like I'd have to watch it back again. But I mean, in that first set, Murray took it to him. Big time. He did exactly what he did in the final in Rome. He was the boss, apart from that opening game when he got broken. And I must admit, when Djokovic won that first game to Love, I thought, here we go. This is going to be one of Djokovic's 6-1 sets that he's been putting on the top players in the world
all
year long.
David, my dad stood up and said, oh, I'm going to go put the barbecue on now then.
Oh, great. You should have invited me round. Didn't get a call there, did I? Anyway, I did, though, when that happened, when he got broken to Love, wonder how Murray would respond. And all fortnight long, it seemed to me, since those couple of five-set matches, his mentality, his psychological approach has been better. And I think in other matches, and certainly in the Australian Open final, it went away very quickly from him that first set, and he was having to fight such a rearguard action. This time he grabbed himself, got the first set on the board, and frankly, Djokovic really did look a little bit pale. Frankly, out there, he looked. It reminded me of the first set of the Australian Open final of about 3 years ago when he went to set down to Murray and looked stressed. I remember watching that from the photographer's pit courtside in the Rod Laver Arena, and you could see the strain on Novak Djokovic's face. Suddenly, when he won the second set in that match, you saw the sheen of freshness come over him, and I felt the same thing happened here. Early in that second set, he relaxed. The shoulders stopped looking tight, and he was hitting his shots with the sort of precision and relentlessness that we've come to know. And it was a dramatic shift, wasn't it?
It was. A couple of things I want to pick up on what you've just said there. First of all, in terms of, you know, what caused the momentum shift, a lot of people suggesting that at least a contributing factor was that overrule from the umpire, Damien de Moussoir, at the end of the first set. Yes, Andy Murray did go on to hold serve and win that first set, but what happened there was the umpire overruled a serve that was called out from Andy Murray. The serve was in, there was no dispute about that, but Damien de Moussoir gave the point to Andy Murray, deeming that Novak Djokovic's return, which was sprayed long, was hit before the call of out came. Now, I think most people seem to think that that was generally the right call, but the significant thing about it was how much it galvanised the crowd in support of Novak Djokovic. And I want to read you a few quotes that have come from Novak Djokovic from his post-match press conference about how much the crowd helped him today, or how much he feels the crowd helped him. He said he felt like everybody at Roland Garros was willing him to finally lift the trophy. I felt like this year when I arrived that it's a really different year from any other. The relationship and connection I had with fans and with all the people that are contributing to the event that I see on a daily basis, it was just different. Obviously, as any other year, I was hoping that this is the year. I felt that kind of support and love from people around that allowed me to be sitting here with the trophy now. That kind of support was very well present in the stadium today. He is stressing that was an incredibly significant factor for him today. And it was something that was really sparked or stoked by that umpiring decision at the end of the first set, wasn't it?
Well, the Roland Garros crowd likes nothing more than to be outraged on somebody's behalf and also to boo. And boy,
you can probably extend that statement to France in general, David.
Well, boy, did they do both. And it was all against the umpire's decision. It was there was that feeling within the stadium that Novak Djokovic had been wronged. And I think he enjoyed that.
I don't think they actually cared whether or not he had been wronged. I think you're absolutely right. I think they just saw an opportunity to feel outraged and jumped upon it.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things that play here from a Novak Djokovic perspective. One is, I think that is probably the first time in any of the Grand Slam titles that he's actually won where he's had the majority of a crowd behind him. I'm racking my brains trying to think of another one that he's won where the crowd weren't cheering more for his opponent. Obviously, Novak has a huge groundswell of loyal support of his own. But if you're talking about the neutrals, he's usually been the favourite and he's usually been the player that hasn't been backed by the crowd. So I think that was an immense feeling of joy for him when he was out there to feel this for the first time, because, you know, we know that it has bothered him over the years. And frankly, who wouldn't it bother when the crowd are cheering for your opponents more often than not? Certainly when he's played against Federer in some of those finals in which it has just gone over the top for me. And at the same time, I don't feel as though he's ever felt I should admit it. Now, whether he should or not is another matter. You know, some people might, some people might not. I think he's always thought, I'm not going to tell everybody that it bothers me. I'm just going to crack on and win these matches anyway. We know, though, and I think you saw there, that it was a huge lift to him. And he was a different man in sets 2, 3 and 4.
Yeah, he absolutely was. And so was Andy Murray, David, wasn't he? I mean, how much of the change in demeanour, the change in level of play, how much was that down to Novak Djokovic? How much was it down to the mental baggage that Andy Murray takes onto the court playing Novak Djokovic? And how much was it down to the extra several hours of tennis that he had played in this tournament in comparison to his opponent? How much was it down to Radek Stepanek and Matthias Borg?
On paper, an extra 5 hours on the court than your opponent over the course of a couple of weeks should come into play. I'm not convinced it did. Maybe it did. I'm not inside Andy Murray's body to know how he was feeling physically out there. Equally, you look at that mental baggage that you referenced. I mean, finally he'd got the first set on the board. That was something we were all waiting for, and that's what made it a match initially. But the other huge statistic to consider here is that in 11 matches of them sharing the first two sets, Djokovic had won 10 of the previous 11. It was only that final in Canada last year that Andy Murray actually ended up winning from one set all. So there was baggage there as well. But I think ultimately for me, the difference was Djokovic. I don't feel that Andy Murray started playing badly. I don't feel in the entire four sets that he had a huge dip. He played well. And yet he was... We saw Novak Djokovic's greatness in those last three sets. He's able to handle the best tennis of the other three best tennis players in the world better than anybody can. And I think it is mind-blowing that he's able to do it. Remember what Federer put on Murray last year at the Wimbledon semi-finals. He couldn't do it to Djokovic. Djokovic had an answer.
Well, he's got an answer to everything, hasn't he, and everyone. I mean, it's impossible. I've said this before on the tennis podcast, to disentangle the mental and the physical and technical from the sport. If you completely discounted the mental aspects of the sport, mental strength, mental frailty from the makeup of a player's game, then the rankings would look completely different. I think Novak Djokovic would probably still be at the top, for that matter, but the rankings in general would look completely different. So yes, Andy Murray played incredibly well in the first set, and had he kept that level up, he probably would have at least hung with Djokovic better. I don't know whether he would have gone on to win, because Djokovic improved his level a lot, but I think he would have at least hung with him and probably taken it to five. And yes, his level did dip a bit, but that's you can't place that as the only narrative on the match. You know, people's levels dip mentally for a million other reasons. And then that brings us on to, you know, the deeply linked mental and physical things that Simon Briggs and I were talking about a couple of podcasts ago. You just can't disentangle the two. So it's too simplistic to just say, oh, well, Murray's level really dipped and he started to lack belief and that was when Djokovic pounced. I don't think that's the case. I mean, look, I think there were signs that Murray was starting to doubt it. You know, there were a couple of points where it was really symptomatic for me of the classic thing of feeling like you just have to do too much with the ball. There were a couple of shots where he had easy putaways at the net and he didn't go for the easy putaway. He went for a dinked shot to make sure there was absolutely no chance that Djokovic could get there, because he was thinking, my goodness me, it has to be so good for him not to get it back. And of course, he ended up making the error because he was thinking that way. This is what the best players in the world do to you. They make you feel like you've just got to do so much. And I think possibly after that first set, Murray was thinking, oh my goodness, can I possibly keep this up? But look, Djokovic, the completely worthy winner. He says this is the most triumphant, the most joyous moment of his career so far. You can understand why. I mean, where this places him in sort of the ranks of achievements in tennis now is quite something. He's right up there. Yes, he now joins Federer and Nadal, his contemporaries, as well as Laver and the rest, with having the career Grand Slam. But Federer and Nadal have never, never held all four at the same time. This is a new achievement just for him. And it is incredible, isn't it?
It is incredible. And, you know, aside from everything he's done himself, I think of all the slams that he's won, this is the one where he will probably look to his support team with the most thanks. I feel that Boris Becker, whether it's Becker or whether it's Marin Vida, I think those two guys have helped him mentally get over this block of winning the French Open, because I think there were doubts there, and he was looking for excuses at times over the last 2 weeks. When he wasn't playing well against Bautista Agut, we talked about that. When he lost the first set today, it would have been so easy for him to just have the flashbacks to last year and see it going wrong again. And I think he was looking up there and connecting and remembering probably what they've told him, and it was working for him. He was able to deal with the moment today, and all power to him.
All power to him. He's now on for the 2016 Golden Slam, David. It is such a real possibility, isn't it? I mean, that is just incredible. I know it's three major tournaments away, but as I said in an earlier podcast, I thought this would be the biggest roadblock in the way of him doing the Golden Slam. I now see it as, you know, possibly even odds on that he might do that. I mean, that's a slight exaggeration, but I now see it as a really definite possibility.
Well, Djokovic... when you consider the way he's scheduling himself, and we know, we're pretty confident that he will not play in that Davis Cup tie against Great Britain, and we're pretty confident that Andy Murray will, unless he has a change of heart. He said he will. We've got Roger Federer, who's been out injured for the last few months. He's not really played much this year at all. We've got Nadal injured. Goodness knows how long he's out for. He's probably not going to play Wimbledon. So suddenly the obstacles in the way of Djokovic are fewer than they even have been in recent years, and that's when they've had these great players up against him. Murray is there's a good chance, you know, that it could be Djokovic against Murray in all four Grand Slam finals this year. That is not beyond the realms. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Djokovic is the overwhelming favourite in every event he plays. Simple as that.
A little word for Andy Murray, David, because you've got to spare a thought for him, hasn't he? I mean, his career has perfectly spanned the peaks of three players who have all completed the calendar Grand Slam. I mean, the fact that there are three players in the same era that have completed... Sorry, not calendar Grand Slam, the career Grand Slam. The fact that there are three players in the same era that have completed the career Grand Slam is incredible. The fact that Andy Murray's career sits perfectly within that era is pretty gutting for him, isn't it? I mean, he is an extraordinary tennis player, and it must be said that he is a more extraordinary tennis player than he would be if the opposition weren't so strong. And he knows that as well as anyone, and that is a very important point to make. But, you know, timing is everything. I'll hark back to my Leighton Hewitt point. You know, there's no way he would be winning a Wimbledon and US Open title in this era. But timing is everything. And is Novak Djokovic, David, they're exactly the same age. You know, it's not like Murray can think, oh, I just have to hang on until Djokovic fades away. Will Djokovic just simply always be in his way? He's lost him in five Grand Slam finals now.
He may well be, given the ages they're at. I still think Murray will dig in again and keep producing and keep getting better. I think the one thing I would disagree potentially with you on there is that he would automatically, if these guys were out of the way, have had the same career himself in terms of producing this level of tennis to win this number of Grand Slams maybe that some of the others have got.
I didn't say the same.
No, but I think my point is that I think that the other players have elevated Andy Murray's level. He likes to have challenges. I think he gets bored, frankly. I don't think he has it in his makeup necessarily to just reel off Grand Slam after Grand Slam quite the way that Djokovic has. It's one of those impossibles to answer, really, isn't it? But I don't think Murray will be too gutted overall to have shared this era with these three guys. He's got some wins against them. He's got some Grand Slam titles. He's the greatest British athlete maybe ever. And there's a lot to be said for that.
But will Djokovic always be in his way?
Yeah, well, he will. Whether Murray occasionally will be able to shunt him out of the way is another matter. I think on grass, I'd very much like to see a match now. I'd love to see a Wimbledon final between these two. I think that could be really interesting, because I think that on that surface is Murray's best chance.
Well, there's every chance. I mean, is anybody out there going to bet against it being a Murray Djokovic Wimbledon final? I'm not sure I would at this stage. I think, as you said, there's every chance they will meet in all of the finals this year. But, you know, as I love to say on the Tennis Podcast, things do happen. Things can happen. Things eventually will happen. Is that vague enough for you? Things happen?
That's very vague. Can we just do our poll? Because I know you love your polls, Catherine.
Hang on, I'm in charge this week, David. I'm in charge.
No, come on.
And that means
all right,
no
polling. You ask it then.
The poll is, how many will he go on to win? Less than 17, 17, 18 to 20, or more than 20? The 17, of course, being crucial, because that is the number that Roger Federer is currently on. Whether or not you think he will add to that number is a different poll for a different day, or just for never, if you share my views on polling. But the results aren't yet in, David. But
Well, but we can give a latest, can't we? 438 votes in the last few minutes. And I probably should have put a 14 or less in as well, because that's the level that Nadal's at the moment, and Djokovic is on 12. I just kind of assumed that he will reach that, to be honest now. I mean, it seems inconceivable that he won't. 8% have said he'll get exactly 17, 31% less than 17. The most that people reckon he'll get is 18 to 20. 43% reckon he'll get 18 to 20 grand slams, and 18% think he'll get more than 20. I mean, I could see him getting up to 17. I really could, and probably beating it.
I don't think that's remotely controversial. I see him probably getting to 17. I would be surprised if he went around the 20 mark. I mean,
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
That would be, my mind would be blown. You know, there are only four of these a year, and, you know, the fact is, as amazing and as brilliant as he is, he's not going to win he's not going to win two calendar year Grand Slams, I don't think.
Do you know, in 2010 in Toronto, a tournament I attended, I managed to get an interview with Roger Federer, and he was on 16 Grand Slam titles at the time. I think this is his 2010, and I said to him, we always seem to, whenever we speak to you these days, ask you, when are you going to finish? You know, we're always sort of trying to work out how long you'll play for. I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I am curious as to your remaining ambitions in the sport. If I said to you could play another 5 years and win three more Grand Slams, would you take that?
No, I wouldn't. I would want to win more. I just believe, obviously, having won, you know, three Grand Slams per season, I think two or three times, I don't even remember, and a few times also two per year, is something that's very doable for me. And, you know, obviously at times I was one set away or two sets away from winning the calendar Grand Slam. So obviously I feel I have a great potential on Grand Slam play. But then again, Grand Slams are not everything. Unfortunately, they have become sort of everything, but to me they're not. That's why I'm playing here. Toronto and Cincinnati and those are also very important tournaments to me, and some like to see it as a lead-up tournament, and I really don't like to hear the taste of that, you know, that people think, oh, you know, who cares about these tournaments? All I know is I'm giving 100% for each and every tournament I play, because I don't play a ton of tournaments, you know. I only play about 16 to 20 tournaments per per year, so I'm not overplaying. And actually that keeps the fire burning. The motivation is huge, you know, for the next few years. And obviously if I can win Grand Slams, that's fantastic, you know, but they are not the only motivation for the next few years.
So I took that as, oh, he wants and thinks he can win 20 then, because three more would have been 19 in 5 years. And he thought he could win more. As it turns out, he's won one more. He's won one Wimbledon in 2012. And of course, he would have been, what, 30, just turning 30 at the time. And that, I'm not saying you come up against a Novak Djokovic every 5 minutes or a Nadal at the level he was and the spurt that Murray had. But I think it does show you when you get into your 30s, certainly for the men, how much more difficult it is to win these things. It'll be interesting to see whether Djokovic can defy that, because he's going to turn 30 next year. He has this fantastic sort of lithe physique, which I think will stand the test of time. But it will be interesting to see whether the likes of Alexander Zverev and Kyrgios can start to close that gap and eventually overhaul him.
That's really interesting. As much as I would love to have been sniffy about your name dropping, David, I did find that incredibly interesting. And it obviously, you know, how he projected himself into the future, you know, is obviously not how things exactly panned out. Maybe he didn't anticipate how difficult it would be being in his 30s.
Well, he's played wonderful tennis, hasn't he? I think he's probably surprised at the level Djokovic has found. I think that if you think back to 2010, he was number three in the world, Djokovic, and that was his position. He was comfortably behind Nadal and Federer. That is why I respect what he's done so much, because he used to rest on his laurels, and Todd Martin, who was working with him at that time, said that. He said his favourite thing to do is to rest on his laurels. He's got this unbelievable ability to cover the court and play these great shots, and he's not pushing himself to the next level. Well, in the last 5 years, he has. He's pushed himself as hard as anybody, ever could, and Djokovic is maximising his potential.
One more then, how many is he going to win?
I think he'll win 18.
And Federer will stay on 17?
Ooh. I think so. I think so now. I mean,
I don't want to hear the words take breath away. No, none of that.
Look, he's already done that for me. He's done it in terms of the... I didn't think necessarily... Well, I did. But I think it was mind-boggling what Federer has done over the last 2 years to get himself back in contention from where he was after that Robredo defeat in 2013, was it, at the US Open, when he lost in the fourth round and he looked washed up and people were saying he's done. And that's, I think, when I said it, just as, I mean, frankly, it was as much out of hope as anything. I just hoped that this guy could finish on a high. I feel as though he's done that since then. He's got to Wimbledon finals. He's produced majestic, magical tennis. He's now had a back injury. He's had a knee injury. How many more times can you keep coming back and doing it again? I think we'll see good tennis again from him, but no, I don't think he won another slam, I'm afraid.
Djokovic 18, then Federer 17. Interesting. Interesting, David. I mean, I'm in charge this week, so I don't have to put my neck on the line. Let's move on to the women's final.
What do you think, Catherine?
I don't know. I don't know what I think. I think he'll get to 17. I think he'll get to 17 is what I think.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it? You can live off that.
I think he'll be just fine. I think I'm not going to be losing any sleep about the fortunes of Novak Djokovic over the next few years. Let's put it that way.
$100 million in the bank.
I think his parents are proud of him. The women's final, speaking of people whose parents will be proud of them, Garbiñe Muguruza is a Grand Slam champion and a very welcome one at that. It was incredible for me, David, seeing her. It was almost actually a bit disarming seeing her in her moments of victory and in her acceptance speech on the court with the trophy. She was so poised and so calm. It was like she was going through the motions and had been doing that for years. It was, you know, in some ways it was incredibly impressive. And I was looking at her thinking, wow, it was like she came out of the womb a Grand Slam champion. How on earth can she be dealing with it like this? But on the other hand, I found it almost a bit eerie. But then, you know, it's what I was talking about in the last podcast. She's sort of trained herself into the mindset of a great, great champion. And everything about her demeanour was of somebody that completely expected to be standing up there with the trophy. It didn't surprise her one bit that she is the champion of Roland Garros. Did it surprise you, David?
It didn't have the feel of Kerber's victory. When Kerber beat Serena Williams, it was your jaw was on the floor, because I don't think she'll ever play tennis like that again, and be able to summon up that level of inspiration. For Muguruza, you're quite right. She took it in her stride. She stepped out on that court thinking, well, I can go toe-to-toe with Serena Williams. That's absolutely fine. And that's what she did. She looked the more calm of the two players throughout the match. She has one of the commentators on Eurosport, Chris Bradnam, used this word to describe the way she moves around the court in between points, regal. And she does that. She has this poised, shoulders back, sort of almost slow motion, deliberate process that she goes through between each point, and it's calming for her, I think. And the interesting thing will be how she backs this up. Obviously, let her enjoy this one first, but she's had a few great moments and big wins in the past, and then has had a few rocky months. And Serena Williams, really, over the last three or four years, just hasn't had that. So can she sustain this? Well, Mats Wilander, who we so often quote on the tennis podcast, he's going to be quoted again here, because during the commentary today, he said, I think Muguruza in a few years' time is going to be on five or six slams.
Which brings me neatly, David, onto my next question. Is she the next new world number one?
Yeah, I think she is. She is the player who has the firepower, the lack of weaknesses. I don't really see any real soft spot there for in Muguruza's game. I think we'll see how much she wants it, I think. But to me, there's a player that knows what she's capable of and wants to achieve it. In a similar way to Djokovic in that regard, I think Muguruza will plow on here. And I hope for Serena's sake that she's able to win enough to break these records before Muguruza gets a hold on this sport, because I think she may well be able to achieve that, because she has no weakness on the surfaces either, Muguruza. She's reached the Wimbledon final, she's won the French Open, she has a perfect game for a hard court. There's not really too much to go wrong out there.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? For Serena, this is a sign, with all due respect to her, and she's obviously been the most incredible athlete well into her mid-30s. But naturally, time is ticking. And you know, it's one thing Angelique Kerber beating her to a Grand Slam title. You know, Angelique Kerber, as great as she is, and she's, you know, by no means a grand old dame of tennis, but she's not the next big thing, is she? She's not somebody that's threatening to steal Serena's mantle at the top and be the next, you know, dominant world number one. I don't think she's ever been talked about in those terms. Muguruza is, you know, Muguruza is somebody that can steal it all away from her. And, you know, so is Madison Keys, although, you know, she's in comparison to how Muguruza's pushed on, you know, Keys has stalled a little bit. Belinda Bencic is as well. It's disappointing to see her out with injury at the moment. This, for me, is more alarming for Serena. I think as well as many others, I took it for granted that Serena would get Steffi's record, that she would get past Steffi's record. And this was the first time, her losing yesterday was the first time that I thought, hang on a second, there's a possibility that she won't. I still think she will, but I now see it as a possibility, at least, that she won't. And that means probably that Serena is as well. It's now starting to cross her mind, hang on a minute, I might not get there. And maybe that was crossing her mind on Saturday as well. Maybe that was part of the problem.
Possibly. I share your view that there is now a small question mark because of the level that Muguruza has found here. And yeah, I mean, the one or two frailties that we're seeing in Serena Williams's game, because these are finals that we expected her to win, both of the last two. And of course, the one at the US Open last year when she didn't even get there, she has been known to fret. And who wouldn't? Chris Evert was saying that when you're there to be shot at, it's more difficult. I still think she'll do it. I think she's a champion. She still has an incredibly high level of tennis. She doesn't look as though she's physically troubled, particularly with the age that she's at. We've got two Grand Slams coming up back to back in the next few months, both on surfaces that she loves. So I still think there's probably just as much likelihood as of her doing it this year and breaking the record as there is of her not doing it at all. She's quite capable of winning the next two back to back.
I think so. Well, do you want me to make an unsolicited, bold prediction, David, in the spirit of the tennis podcast? I think she's going to win Wimbledon. I think she'll, thus equaling Steffi's record, I think she will win the US Open, breaking Steffi's record, and then I think she'll retire with Venus. There you go. How's that?
Catherine, I'm really proud of you.
I've come a long way, haven't I?
I'm so impressed.
Although also, I've sort of gone backwards, because what this is a bold Serena Williams-related prediction, which is what I vowed never to do again. So,
no, but that really is bold. That is good. I'm not even going to say anything else. You can have that one.
It's good, isn't it? It's good. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe they'll win doubles gold at the Olympics and then... I don't know. I'm not going to complicate things. I've been bold. There it is.
Good. Love it.
You can disagree?
No.
Okay.
I'm just totally bowled over. I can't believe that you, of all people, have come up with a prediction like that. I'm so proud.
Right then. All that remains, David, I think, is for a little reflection on the tournament as a whole. And I know it's tempting to get a bit negative. I mean, we can't hide from the fact that it has been a difficult tournament, hasn't it? I think everybody's lasting feeling is, goodness me, bring on that roof. It can't come soon enough. And I'm sure that all the tournament organisers, A, are just pretty glad it's over, frankly, and B, wishing they'd started construction on that roof a few years earlier. But there's nothing they can do about that now. The roof is coming. It will be there in a matter of years, I think 2019. And aside from that, you know, yes, it's been a trying tournament, I think, for everybody. But what stories, you know, what people will remember is Muguruza's first slam. And if she goes on to be the great champion that we think she'll be, you know, it will all have started here at 2016 Roland Garros. And 2016 Roland Garros will always be the year, the tournament, when Novak Djokovic, who also could go on to be the greatest of all time, David Law predicts will go on to be the greatest of all time, in Grand Slam terms anyway, it will be where he won his career Grand Slam. And that is what it will be remembered for at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, we're a grumpy lot in the tennis world at times, and we tend to have a few days of rain, or things don't go so well, or there's a bad decision made, and we can get a bit over the top, I think, and I'm guilty of it as well. And I do
speak for yourself, David. I mean, if you'd stepped in three separate puddles on your way into work one morning, you would be grumpy too.
Well, the case in point, Catherine Whittaker, grumpy Catherine Whittaker, speaks for all the people there, as you can see. But the fact is, you have a good final weekend like we've just had, and you're right, that is what you end up remembering it for. And I'm also just hopefully educated a little bit by the memory of the Australian Open, I think a couple of years ago, when we had those four consecutive days of 40 degrees plus, when everybody was saying something's got to be done about this, and, you know, they've got to start playing the matches later on in the day and all this sort of stuff. And one of my colleagues, more experienced colleagues, just said, yeah, but how often has this ever happened before? You know, if you go over the decades, this hasn't happened before, really. And sure enough, the last 2 years at the Australian Open, there's been no heat issues whatsoever. So probably next year, there'll be a bit of rain, but it probably won't be too bad. Yes, they need a roof. That much is obvious. It's staring everybody in the face. The US Open is about to unveil its own roof in September, which is long overdue as well. So yes, they all need to have them so that the show can go on. That will happen. I think, yes, they've made mistakes at times this fortnight, but I think we should cut them a bit of slack, honestly.
Oh, I entirely agree. I mean, my hearts go out to them, really. I can see what a tough fortnight it's been for them, and I'm sure the celebrations at the staff party tonight will be pretty heartfelt and much needed. But yeah, I think slack has to be cut. We are, you know, we do all lose sight of the fact that basically we're all travelling around the world talking about tennis for a living, and stepping in puddles, as annoying as it might be at the time, in the grander scheme of things, is a pretty much in the category of first world problems, isn't it? Well, I mean,
however, if anybody puts a puddle in front of me at any Grand Slam tournament, there's going to be hell to pay.
Well, it's not going to be a problem, David, because there's going to be no puddles at all during the British grass court season. Never a raindrop in sight at the Queen's Club. That's in a couple of weeks' time. Next week, it's the Aegon Open in Nottingham. I'll be presenting that live coverage of that for Eurosport, so do tune into that. And, of course, the following week, it's the Aegon Championships from the Queen's Club. And we're all very much looking forward to a glorious sunny week there, aren't we, David?
We are. And, in fact, I've got a press release open here from the Aegon Open in Nottingham, which headlines Johanna Konta set to shine as sun comes out for Aegon Open Nottingham. Talk about being smug about the weather, but why wouldn't you if you're going to get a few good days of weather? That's what they're going to get in Nottingham. It's going to be good fun to see that because they've got a good feel. Johanna Konta will be there. She's actually playing the American Victoria Duval, who's had such ill health of late. So good to see her back on the circuit. Karolina Pliskova is going to be there as well. So, you know, if you are interested in going and seeing the tennis in Nottingham, do it. It's a nice place to go and watch tennis. The start of the grass court season. Loads of British players are playing.
Whoa, David. I'll stop you there, because if you don't have the chance to see it, you can watch on Eurosport, and that's
yeah, but
just
then
great
you
too.
Record it. Record it, Catherine, you know, and then
double
be able to see a bit of Catherine Whittaker
action later. Okay, I see what you've done there.
Well.
Okay, yeah, fine. I'll let it go.
Right, fine. And when we get to the Aegon Championships at the Queen's Club the week after, we, Catherine Whittaker, are going to be having daily tennis podcasts.
Daily. Daily. If you didn't have enough of us already... you will have done by the end of the Aegon Championships. Yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to be really, really good fun. It's going to be full on. I need to go and get some sleep because the grass court season is it's hectic, isn't it, David? But we just love it.
We do. We love it. We love it. So enjoy your week in Nottingham, Catherine. Do bring me a bow and arrow, whatever they dish out from Nottingham, Sherwood Forest and all that.
I would love to, but I feel a bit of a fraud now because I'm not actually going to be in Nottingham. I'm going to be in Eurosport Studios in Feltham. But I'm sure, you know, eBay's got bow and arrows, hasn't it?
Indeed.
Anyway, thank you very much for your company, David, for your insight. It's been really interesting. It's been 2016 Roland Garros. We have been the Tennis Podcast. We've been brought to you in association with The Telegraph, and we will be back soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.